Hello, this is the listening test.
You're going to listen to a recorded material. Before you listen, you have to read instructions carefully, and you will listen twice.
Part 1. You are going to hear a talk about the Komodo dragon. As you listen, fill in the missing information. For questions 1 to 15, write no more than 3 words in the spaces provided. Write your answers in the corresponding numbered boxes. Before listening, you will have some time to look at the questions 1 to 15. Now listen carefully to answer the question 1 to 15.
While the myth of the dragon can be traced across the globe, the Komodo dragon is the closest thing we've got in terms of name, size, and general badassery. Although they aren't quite like the dragons in popular culture, Komodo dragons are pretty impressive animals. For starters, they are the world's largest living lizard. They look stocky, but they can reach speeds up to 30 kilometers an hour, no problem. Speaking as a large mammal, my first instinct when looking into the eyes of a Komodo dragon, even in zoos, is to run. This must be what other large mammals, like water buffalo, deer, or wild boars, feel when they stumble upon a Komodo dragon in the wild. They can be up to 3 meters long, weigh up to 136 kilograms, and are covered with bony scales called osteoderms that act like armored plating. They have long, yellow forked tongues that provide their dragon sense. As they retract their tongue into its sheath, a chemical analyzing organ at the top of their mouth is able to detect airborne molecules. If there are more deer particles on the left tongue tip, it knows to look left for its prey. With this sense, they can find carrion from as far away as 4 kilometers. Another incredible fact about the Komodo dragon is that they're capable of having virgin births. In 2006, zookeepers were stunned when 2 female dragons in 2 different zoos gave birth without having any male contact in years. At first, scientists thought that this was explained by the fact that the reptiles can hold on to sperm for several years, but genetic analysis shows only the mother's DNA. That's right, Komodo Jesus. Komodo dragons have legendary appetites and can consume up to 80% of their body weight in one meal. To put that in perspective, if you're a 150-pound person, that would be like eating 120 pounds of meat for dinner. Komodo dragons don't care if their meat is dead, carrion, or living. Either way, they'll take it down. They also have the ability to regurgitate all of their stomach contents if they need to make a speedy getaway from an aggressor. The average large mammalian carnivore will often leave about 25 to 30% of their kills. Komodos devour almost everything, leaving only about 12%. In case the gaping wounds left by those teeth aren't frightening enough, they also inject venom into their prey, which decreases the victim's blood pressure enough to send it into shock, leaving it helpless and easy picking for the dragon to finish it off. For many years, we thought that Komodo dragon saliva contained bacteria that killed their prey through blood poisoning. But more recent research has revealed that it's the venom that does the trick. Komodo dragons are endangered animals, found only on a few islands, including Komodo, in Indonesia. Because they feed on large mammals, habitat loss and poaching has hit them hard, so their populations are dwindling.
Now listen again.
While the myth of the dragon can be traced across the globe, the Komodo dragon is the closest thing we've got in terms of name, size, and general badassery. Although they aren't quite like the dragons in popular culture, Komodo dragons are pretty impressive animals. For starters, they are the world's largest living lizard. They look stocky, but they can reach speeds up to 30 kilometers an hour, no problem. Speaking as a large mammal, My first instinct when looking into the eyes of a Komodo dragon, even in zoos, is to run. This must be what other large mammals like water buffalo, deer, or wild boars feel when they stumble upon a Komodo dragon in the wild. They can be up to 3 meters long, weigh up to 136 kilograms, and are covered with bony scales called osteoderms that act like armored plating. They have long, yellow forked tongues that provide their dragon sense. As they retract their tongue into its sheath, a chemical analyzing organ at the top of their mouth is able to detect airborne molecules. If there are more deer particles on the left tongue tip, it knows to look left for its prey. With this sense, they can find carrion from as far away as 4 kilometers. Another incredible fact about the Komodo dragon is that they're capable of having virgin births. In 2006, zookeepers were stunned when 2 female dragons in 2 different zoos gave birth without having any male contact in years. At first, scientists thought that this was explained by the fact that the reptiles can hold on to sperm for several years, but genetic analysis shows only the mother's DNA. That's right, Komodo Jesus. Komodo dragons have legendary appetites and can consume up to 80% of their body weight in one meal. To put that in perspective, if you're a 150-pound person, that would be like eating 120 pounds of meat for dinner. Komodo dragons don't care if their meat is dead, carrion, or living. Either way, they'll take it down. They also have the ability to regurgitate all of their stomach contents if they need to make a speedy getaway from an aggressor. The average large mammalian carnivore will often leave about 25 to 30% of their kills. Komodos devour almost everything, leaving only about 12%. In case the gaping wounds left by those teeth aren't frightening enough, they also inject venom into their prey, which decreases the victim's blood pressure enough to send it into shock, leaving it helpless and easy picking for the dragon to finish it off. For many years, we thought that Komodo dragon saliva contained bacteria that killed their prey through blood poisoning. But more recent research has revealed that it's the venom that does the trick. Komodo dragons are endangered animals, found only on a few islands, including Komodo, in Indonesia. Because they feed on large mammals, habitat loss and poaching has hit them hard, so their populations are dwindling.
That is the end of part one.
Part two. You will hear Tom and Annie, 2 students talking with their professor about their assignment. First, you will have some time to look at the questions 16 to 21. Now listen carefully to answer questions 16 to 21.
Professor Tomlinson, may Annie and I please quickly ask you a few questions about the reflective journal assignment? It's just that we're a bit confused as to what you want us to include and discuss.
Yes, of course. What are you having trouble with?
Well, everything, really. To start with, what should be included first in the reflective journal? Perhaps suggestions from others?
No. Firstly, you should include the study goals you set yourself at the beginning of the module. This section should have been discussed in some detail towards the beginning of the course by Professor May. You should be able to find her suggestions on the slides she has provided the class online.
Okay, thank you, Professor. Could I also trouble you to take a brief look at my bibliography and footnotes? I feel like they're missing something. Most of our friends' bibliographies are longer.
Well, looking at this, Annie, I can see that you have used a wide range of resources, which shows that you have made effective use of communication technology. As far as I can tell, you need not make any changes to this. Although you might want to double-check that your referencing complies with the Harvard Referencing Style regulations.
Oh, I'm very surprised you've said that. Thank you. Now I can set my mind at ease. Tom, You said you wanted to ask the professor about the achievements section.
Ah, yes, Professor. In the assignment guidelines, we're asked to introduce and elaborate on our biggest achievement in the past, saying which skills we learned in the process and how these skills can be transferred to various different future careers. The only problem is that I don't know what my greatest achievement actually is. I've only ever worked as a waiter in a hotel restaurant during the summer holidays from university.
If you worked as a waiter in a hotel restaurant, you're bound to have worked with other waiters as part of a team. Would you say that during your time as a waiter, you developed any leadership skills?
Yes, well, I suppose I was asked to become the team leader of the food and beverage department, but that's hardly an achievement.
You might not think so, but if you write that you were offered the position of the team leader, it shows a lot more about your character. For example, that you're charismatic and work well in a high-pressure situation.
I never would have thought to write that down. Thank you. I guess I should start listening to others more often. Annie, do you have any more questions, or are you ready to go back to the library?
Yeah, I think I've got everything I need. Thank you very much, Professor Tomlinson.
That was really helpful. I'm actually starting to look forward to writing this now. And it should be a really useful exercise to prepare us for writing CVs and applying for jobs. It's shocking how bad I am at identifying my strengths and weaknesses. Professor Tomlinson has shown me that I definitely need to start displaying some self-awareness.
Yeah, Tom, you really do. You're always so modest. Modesty is great until it comes to applying for jobs.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at the questions 22 to 25. Now listen carefully to answer the questions 22 to 25.
Oh no! I forgot to ask the professor about the section on identifying the skills gained through different activities. Do you remember? When it asks you, for example, whether writing an essay develops your study skills or your independent learning and so on.
Oh goodness, we really should have asked him that. I've been having trouble with it too. It just seems like such a pointless task. What do you reckon the answers are?
I think writing an essay might be a way of identifying and resolving a problem, because you have to state the problem in the introduction and then solve it. I'm not so sure about taking exams. I thought they were supposed to develop lots of different skill sets. If I really had to choose, I'd say that taking exams enables you to become more confident in yourself. Do you agree?
Maybe. I really don't know either. What do you think about the last two? Making class notes and presentation notes?
Oh, it's so difficult. I think making class notes has to be a way of becoming a more independent learner. Because you yourself decide what the important information is and learn it. That reminds me, I find taking presentation notes is a disaster. The professors speak much too quickly, and I write much too slowly.
Now listen again. Now listen carefully to answer questions 16 to 21.
Professor Tomlinson, may Annie and I please quickly ask you a few questions about the reflective journal assignment? It's just that we're a bit confused as to what you want us to include and discuss.
Yes, of course. What are you having trouble with?
Well, everything really. To start with, what should be included first in the reflective journal? Perhaps suggestions from others?
No. Firstly, you should include the study goals you set yourself at the beginning of the module. This section should have been discussed in some detail towards the beginning of the course by Professor May. You should be able to find her suggestions on the slides she has provided the class online.
Okay, thank you, Professor. Could I also trouble you to take a brief look at my bibliography and footnotes? I feel like they're missing something. Most of our friends' bibliographies are longer.
Well, looking at this, Annie, I can see that you have used a wide range of resources, which shows that you have made effective use of communication technology. As far as I can tell, you need not make any changes to this, although you might want to double-check that your referencing complies with the Harvard referencing style regulations.
Oh, I'm very surprised you've said that. Thank you. Now I can set my mind at ease. Tom, you said you wanted to ask the professor about the achievements section.
Ah, yes, Professor. In the assignment guidelines, we're asked to introduce and elaborate on our biggest achievement in the past, saying which skills we learned in the process and how these skills can be transferred to various different future careers. The only problem is that I don't know what my greatest achievement actually is. I've only ever worked as a waiter in a hotel restaurant during the summer holidays from university.
If you worked as a waiter in a hotel restaurant, you're bound to have worked with other waiters as part of a team. Would you say that during your time as a waiter, you developed any leadership skills?
Yes, well, I suppose I was asked to become the team leader of the food and beverage department, but that's hardly an achievement.
You might not think so, but if you write that you were offered the position of the team leader, it shows a lot more about your character. For example, that you're charismatic and work well in a high-pressure situation.
I never would have thought to write that down. Thank you. I guess I should start listening to others more often. Annie, do you have any more questions, or are you ready to go back to the library?
Yeah, I think I've got everything I need. Thank you very much, Professor Tomlinson.
That was really helpful. I'm actually starting to look forward to writing this now, and it should be a really useful exercise to prepare us for writing CVs and applying for jobs. It's shocking how bad I am at identifying my strengths and weaknesses. Professor Tomlinson has shown me that I definitely need to start displaying some self-awareness.
Yeah, Tom, you really do. You're always so modest. Modesty is great until it comes to applying for jobs.
Now listen carefully to answer the questions 22 to 25.
Oh no! I forgot to ask the professor about the section on identifying the skills gained through different activities. Do you remember? When it asks you, for example, whether writing an essay develops your study skills or your independent learning and so on.
Oh goodness, we really should have asked him that. I've been having trouble with it too. It just seems like such a pointless task. What do you reckon the answers are?
I think writing an essay might be a way of identifying and resolving a problem, because you have to state the problem in the introduction and then solve it. I'm not so sure about taking exams. I thought they were supposed to develop lots of different skill sets. If I really had to choose, I'd say that taking exams enables you to become more confident in yourself. Do you agree?
Maybe. I really don't know either. What do you think about the last two? Making class notes and presentation notes?
Oh, it's so difficult. I think making class notes has to be a way of becoming a more independent learner, because you yourself decide what the important information is and learn it. That reminds me, I find taking presentation notes is a disaster. The professors speak much too quickly, and I write much too slowly.
That is the end of the listening test.